Hello, my name is Colleen Dietz.
And I'm Miranda Crandall. We are the Angels on Fire.
And this is Mormon Happy Hour. We are two post-Mormon gals bringing you the hottest topics in Mormonism. We will keep you current, keep you entertained, and keep you tuned in.
This is episode 8.
On this episode, we have quite a few things to bring to you today that we're very excited about. We will be talking about Dan Reynolds' upcoming documentary, Believer, that will be debuting on HBO and has just come out at Sundance this week. We will also be covering my favorite new Instagram account called BYUPDA. It's hilarious.
Can't miss it. It's really good.
Hours of laughing. And we will also be hitting the news of Josh Weed and his announcement with his wife Lolly that they will be divorcing. We also have another installment of Faith Destroying Rumors that we will expand to Faith Promoting, just so we can give a little juxtaposition for the fun of it. This week we made an exciting discovery that I wanted to share with you all because it comes from you. We noticed this week we have 4 5-star reviews on our iTunes account for Mormon Happy Hour Podcasts.
Yay!
So thrilled about that.
Thank you.
This is such validation. This is fabulous. My favorite one is from Linear Lane, and she titles it A Post-Mormon Gin and Tonic. Refreshing, thoughtful, and conversationally engaging, these two ladies take the post-Mormon and Mormon news and digest it in the fashion of post-Mormon visiting teachers. This podcast should be listened to while relaxing, so heat the tea kettle or rim the martini glass and listen. Linear Lane, you are hired. You are invited on the show anytime. We love that.
As long
Thank
as you,
you
bring martinis.
Yes, please.
I also just want to say a quick thanks to everyone who participates on our social media accounts, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and be sure to leave a review on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts.
That's a great way to boost the visibility of our show and to bring more listeners into our community.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thanks for helping us out on Reddit this week. It was fantastic. We got lots of great feedback on our Faith Destroying Rumors, so thank you. Before we get started, I did have 2 corrections this week that I'm so glad that you guys are fact-checking us and bringing things to our attention. If we get things colossally wrong, like if it's a major fuck-up.
we want to fix that issue.
Yeah, so thanks so much for bringing things to our attention. Keep it up. So Tim Burt is one of our listeners who brought to my attention that I did say that Oakes attended the J. Reuben Clark Law School at BYU and Chicago Law. And the actual correction is that Oakes was the president of BYU during the foundation of the J. Reuben Clark Law School. So he oversaw the beginning of the BYU Law School because he was the president from 71 to 80.
Right. So he didn't just attend. He was the president.
Yes.
That's the correction.
So the correction was that he attended Chicago Law. He was the president of the school and oversaw the foundation of. And the other correction that I wanted to make that a lot of people brought to my attention, I got a lot of feedback after our last episode, because I did claim that Dallin H. Oakes was the author of the Proclamation of the Family. So before I say that I was wrong, I just wanted to clarify where I got that. And you guys can draw your own conclusions based on the evidence presented, which was an excellent presentation of evidence. So I got that opinion from Bill Reel and his episode on Mormon Discussions, where he brought in Radio Free Mormon and the two of them discussed the background and history of the formation of the Proclamation of the Family. And his concluding statement was that Oakes was the author. Feel free to listen to the episode and draw your own conclusions, but I am fairly confident in agreeing with Bill that it definitely sounds like an Oakes piece.
So today, my post-Mormon tip is going to be about beer. There are so many different types of beers. You can have ale, pale lager, dark lager, draft, IPA, which stands for India Pale Ale, Belgian-style ale, porter, wheat beer, stouts, specialty beers. There's so many different types of beers. Personally, I'm not huge into beers yet, but I always love to try new ones. My husband likes beers more, so he'll get one and I'll have a taste, or I'll get a flight of beers, which is like 5 or 6 mini beers that you can taste. So I do flights quite a bit, more than just a regular beer.
Like at a brewery?
Right.
Those are so fun.
Yeah, breweries, or there's a great restaurant in Scottsdale that I love that has tons of different beers. Craft beers are all, I like craft beers a lot better too. But today I want to tell you about India Pale Ale, an IPA. That's a super common one. I'm sure you've heard about or seen it on the shelves if you don't already drink it. An American IPA has more hops and a big herbal or citrus flavor with a higher bitterness compared to something like a pale ale. Mm-hmm. And an imperial or double IPAs are an American IPA, but with a stronger flavor, more hop bitterness, and a higher alcohol content.
Oh, okay. So they're like, they're double right, intensity.
Double intensity.
Okay.
And then on the flip side, an English IPA is very similar, except it'll have a lower alcohol content and less flavor. Oh. A little bit more
refreshing, possibly. Right,
maybe, yeah. And the other beer that I wanted to focus on is a stout. Stout is a dark beer that features malt flavors working to create strong chocolate and coffee notes, but without overpowering hop bitterness. Mm-hmm. So both of these beers are hops. They're based with hops, which is a grain that they're made from.
Yeah.
So beers are made from grains, different grains.
I'm definitely more of a beer drinker than an alcohol drinker. I really like stouts. I prefer like a peanut butter stout, uh-huh, or things like that, a chocolate stout. It has a very heavy mouth feel. It almost feels more dense.
Right.
It's creamy. I like.
Like a loaf of bread in your stomach.
No, that's the morning after.
Oh, right.
Yeah, stouts the morning after are interesting. But no, I love stouts because I really like them. I know that it's not common for women to like stouts, but I really do. The first time I met them, obviously, I didn't like them, but I quickly grew to really, really like them.
So. And that's why I want to drink more, you know, I want to try more things and you get used to it.
Yes, I really like stouts. They're one of my favorites.
So let me know what your favorite beer is on our Facebook page or Twitter or Instagram.
I found 10 ways that beer can make you healthier from webstrantstore.com.
So take that to your bishop.
Yeah. So, number one is kidney stone prevention. Beer contains high levels of potassium, and it acts as a diuretic, which are both great for kidney health and function. Number two, heart health. Beer can actually raise levels of HDL, which is the good cholesterol your body needs. Having higher levels of HDL lowers your risk of heart attack and hypertension. Hmm. So, there you go. Number three, B, as in beer. Your favorite cold brew contains several essential B vitamins, especially vitamin B6, which is important for hormone regulation and healthy brain function.
Excellent.
Which leads us to number four, better brain function. Believe it or not, drinking beer can actually aid your overall cognitive health. Xanthohumol is a flavonoid that contributes to this. Number five, run recovery. Now, this is probably my favorite one. The polyphenols that are found in beer hops can reduce inflammation in the muscles and joints. A study at the University of Granada in Spain found that drinking a pint of beer post-workout was actually more hydrating than the same amount of water.
That's excellent.
Yeah, so I'm going to be hitting the bar right after the gym.
I used to live in Spokane, Washington, and there was a running club that would start at the pub. Uh-huh. They would run around downtown Spokane, and then they'd end in the pub, and everyone would take a drink.
That's awesome. So
it was the awesomest running club ever. And I've actually run a few marathons where, when you cross the finish line, they hand you a beer. Wow. So that's super fun. And I was a Mormon when I ran, so I never drank my beer. I missed out.
Well, so I'm sure someone else drank it for you.
Yes, they did. I always had friends at the finish line that would drink my beer.
All right, number six, good for your gut. Beer contains soluble fiber from malt, which is essential to the brewing process and adds in overall GI health. It also stimulates the production of certain necessary stomach enzymes. Number seven, strong brews for strong bones. Beer contains silicon, which functions to keep bones strong, warding off osteoporosis and lowering your risk of bone fractures. Number eight, staves off type 2 diabetes. Chemicals called isohumulones, which contribute to the bitter taste in beer, can act to keep blood sugars at a healthy level, reducing your risk of developing type 2 diabetes.
Hey, there's one reason to choke down an IPA.
Yeah. Number nine is the common cold killer. The antioxidants found in the goji berries and acai are also floating around in your pint glass. These helpful chemicals are especially prevalent in fruit beers and work to keep the common cold at bay, which I love fruit beers. So there you go. Now I gotta go get a beer.
Go find a new lambic.
Yeah. Number 10 is stress reliever. Of course. This has got to be, this is number one in my book. But finally, there's nothing quite like the stress relief that comes from indulging in your favorite brew. Drinking beer is not only delicious, but can also lower your blood pressure and help you sleep better.
Good to know.
Yep.
It can also help you calm down and not yell at your kids when they're driving you crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
It works.
Too bad it also gives you a beer belly.
So, oh, man. You know.
One other beer-related topic I want to tell you about is a fantastic documentary that I watched. I watched it as a true believing Mormon.
This really?
I watched it as true and loved it. I thought it was great. It came out in 2011. It's called How Beer Saved the World. It's a documentary about beer in history, how it was made, why it was made, and how it changed all of history.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So check it out.
So this past week, Sundance is happening in Provo, Utah. Sundance is if you're not familiar, it's a large, nationally recognized, especially by the industry. It's really big in the film industry. It's a film festival put on by Robert Redford in up Provo Canyon, because that's where Sundance is.
Uh-huh.
So there was a film that debuted at Sundance. It's called Believer, and it is a documentary on the past year or so of Dan Reynolds' life. And Dan Reynolds is the frontman and creator of the band Imagine Dragons. And they are an award-winning band. If you haven't heard of Imagine Dragons, they're excellent. Check them out. I'm sure once you start listening to their music, you'll recognize that you hear them all the time. He actually still claims to be an active believing Mormon.
Really?
Yes. So if you look into the activism of Dan Reynolds in that context, it's very, very interesting. So he met his wife, who is also a very talented musician. She is a never Mormon. They met, they fell in love, and her two best friends were lesbians. They were a couple that were her roommates. And so through this experience of dating his wife, getting married, and the best friend lesbians, their reaction to him as a Mormon was very influential for Dan, because the best friends did not attend their wedding.
Wow.
Because it was basically on principle, because it was so hurtful to them what he represented as a Mormon, because of the attitudes Mormons often have, and especially the church policy towards the LGBTQ community.
I'm shocked.
Yes.
Wow.
So that was a big rift. It was really hard for Dan, really obviously terribly hard for his wife, because these were her best friends that didn't attend the wedding. So the documentary kind of follows his becoming aware of really the depth and the seriousness of the issue within the LGBTQ community and Mormonism, and the suicide rate in Utah Valley and things like that. The documentary follows the creation of the Love Loud Foundation, which is a music festival that Dan Reynolds promoted in Utah County in August of 2017. So that was just last fall.
Uh-huh.
And it was actually a benefit that would go to support organizations that were making big waves to support the LGBTQ community within Utah.
Okay.
And all of Mormonism, but specifically in Utah. So the documentary is a deeply reflective journey with Dan as he grapples with bringing attention to the struggles of the LGBT community within Mormonism. So it's a great documentary. Once it comes out on HBO, definitely check it out and let us know what you think.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it.
Mm-hmm. So my favorite discovery this week, if you're in our Facebook group, Mormon Happy Hour Podcast on Facebook, you will catch the post that I made of my favorite Instagram account that I shared with Miranda. Shared it with my friend Ryan McKnight. We tossed him back a couple times. I almost peed my pants laughing. So the Instagram account. Oh, and I reached out to them. So if you're listening, like, what the fuck?
We need this.
Don't leave me hanging here.
We need more.
So it's called BYU PDA. Pretty simple. That's the entire account name. And it is the most epically cringeworthy photos and videos.
Oh, yeah.
Of just epically, clinically repressed, sexually repressed couples at BYU. Uh-huh. and they're super awkward and inappropriate. Yeah.
I mean, just the level of PDA that is going on in public. It's just, you just gonna throw up. like, what are they doing? But so, they can't go somewhere private mm-hmm. because then they might accidentally have sex.
So yeah, that's the thing that I wanted to talk about is like, why does this exist? So first, before we move on, Miranda, what does PDA stand for anyone that may not know?
Public display of affection.
There you go. So that's exactly what you want to see between
between horny Mormons. Horny teenagers. Well, I guess early 20s too, but
so I wanted to know, like, and I'm going to throw this out to the listeners, if you have spent any time recently on college campuses, is this a thing on any other college campus, or is it just a thing at BYU, and why is it a thing at BYU? So my theory is that they're just, like you talked about, they're so sexually repressed, they don't have anywhere else to go because of honor code restrictions, and I have to think that they might have this, like, because every couple, Mormon couple has these couple rules, so we don't go too far. And I wonder if, like, one of the couple rules is we only do these things in public we don't ever go too far.
Oh, my goodness. They've already gone too far, in my opinion.
So then the rest of us are, you know, we're doomed to have to suffer through their PDA.
Oh, God, yeah.
And in thinking about whether this is just a phenomenon at BYU or not, I couldn't help but reflect back to my own time at BYU mm-hmm. and think, oh, God, was I one of these people? Are there videos somewhere of me being super grotesque in public? So then I remembered a story that I have tried to repress from my memory.
Uh-huh.
I was dating a pretty Peter Priesthood dude because I'd had some bad luck in dating the rebel boys that I wanted to date.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, maybe I need to date the Peter Priesthood because that's what I'm supposed to marry.
Right.
So I found one that I tolerated and we dated for a hot second. And during the course of us dating, apparently we were pretty serious, but I blocked it out.
Oh.
But we were sitting on my couch in my apartment kissing. Just kissing. Oh, we were sitting on the couch, no contact whatsoever other than kissing. And suddenly, he jumps up, he screams, starts freaking out. He jizzed his pants. My living room!
Dude. Dude. Go drink. Stop. Go get a cold drink of water. Do whatever you gotta think of your grandma. Do whatever you gotta do. You don't... Oh, gee. Okay, go on. It gets worse.
So because we were kind of in a serious relationship at this point, he convinces me that we need to go talk to the bishop.
Oh, my word. Yeah, he needs to go talk to the bishop. You did nothing.
He needs to go talk to a counselor. So I go along because he's my boyfriend, and we sit down, and he tells the bishop what we were doing, that he, you know, creamed his pants, and then both him and the bishop, like, turn to me at once and look at me, and I don't remember if there were words said. There had to have been. They both looked at me like, it was my fault!
Yeah. Like, what do you have to say for yourself, Pauline? Yeah!
Like, I needed to repent of something, and I'm like, are you kidding me right now?
That's
like,
ridiculous.
I was like, how is this my responsibility?
Yeah. Let me ask you, how many other guys have jizzed their pants from kissing alone that happened with you?
Well, see, that's the thing. And that's why I think I was so like, are you fucking kidding me right now?
Yeah.
Because I was kind of a makeout slut in high school. Right. Because I was Mormon and that's all you do is you just make out.
Yeah.
So I made out extensively. Like, and I'm talking like,
there's air quotes on that, by the way. I'm adding them.
Like, I'm talking, you know, vertical, grinding, make out.
Right.
Never once did I ever experience what I experienced at BYU when I was in high school.
Yeah.
So, again, back to the whole, like, sexual repression. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. And now they're blaming you for his issues.
Right. Like, they tried to make it my fault.
Like, okay. If he had jizzed his pants and then, whoa, sorry, I need to go to the bathroom, just give me a minute.
Right.
You know, like, that's one thing. Uh-huh. Stuff happens, you know, I get that. Yeah. I understand it. It's a little weird because you never had this happen before.
Uh-huh.
You know what? I can get past that. But his reaction
to march me in.
Yeah, is completely ridiculous.
Oh, gotta love BYU, man.
So I'm just hoping that all of these poor ladies in BYU PDA situations are not having to go through all of this shame and guilt.
I'm sure they are.
Yes. Yeah. And the men too. The men too.
So our next topic is pretty heavy. It's some pretty heavy shit. This week, Josh Weed announced on his blog, The Weeds, that he and his wife, Lolly, will be getting a divorce. The reason why this is so significant is because Josh Weed made a very public, very viral blog post back in July, the summer of 2012. He made a blog post welcoming people to the Unicorn Club and announcing, coming out to the world, that he and his wife, Lolly, they had been married for quite a few years. They had 4 children at this point. They announced to the world that Josh was gay and that they were living in a mixed orientation marriage and that they were happy. It was working. And it was a great post for them, I guess. It was exciting for them. But then the reaction and the utilization of this post. It became a monster because it was weaponized in the hands of true believing Mormons who either had friends or family members who expressed same-sex attraction or anything in the LGBTQ spectrum. So with a little bit of that background on their 2012 viral post, the post went so viral that there was a short-term documentary following their lives. They made the television circuits. It was a big deal.
Interviews?
Yes. Wow. Lots and lots of interviews. It was a very, very big deal.
Because it's seemingly the first time that an sexual orientation marriage can supposedly succeed mm-hmm. within the Mormon Church.
Right.
Who was so actively against the gay community, the mm-hmm. LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm. And there were quite a few, actually, that were well-known around the same time. Since that time, many of those have also ended in divorce. And so the Weeds were kind of like the last man standing.
Yeah.
So this past week, Josh made his blog post announcing that they would divorce. And there are lots of implications of this post. It's heavy and it's being taken in a lot of different ways. And I don't want to spend a whole lot of time hashing it out myself because I am not a member of the LGBTQIA community. So I cannot speak for firsthand experience.
Right.
But I can share what I have heard, what I have read, and kind of boost the voices of those that are in the community. So that's what I kind of wanted to do today. So the reason why this announcement was such a big deal is because they were the last man standing. Their post was weaponized. And kind of the backstory is that both Josh and Lolly are both marriage therapists.
Really?
And once they made their 2012 post, their lives were absolutely flooded with members of the LGBTQ community coming into their service to seek their services.
Wow.
And so they really were immersed in the lives and experiences of this community within the Mormon faith. So they knew.
Right.
And so for them to make this announcement, they kind of had to make this follow-up
post. Yeah, after everything that's happened.
They had to make the follow-up post because they had made huge realizations that Josh has immense internalized homophobia and that has led them to make decisions that they now feel like are hurting both of them and their family.
Yeah.
And so that's why they made the decision that they needed to divorce and they needed to seek out fulfilling relationships with men, both of them.
How long have they been married?
I don't know how long they've been married total. They made their blog post coming out 5 years ago and they already had 4 children at that time.
I think it said something about 10 years in the blog post, mm-hmm. which I skimmed through.
And they've known each other since they were 3 years old. So they have a very, yeah. very strong bond.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the heartbreaking thing about the story is that it's not that they don't love each other deeply.
Yeah.
It's that they fundamentally are not compatible because when your orientation is such that you aren't attracted to the gender of your spouse, no matter how much you actually love them, there's always going to be this fundamental lack. And they finally become aware of that. One of the things that Lolly actually references in the post is the example that their relationship was setting for their children.
And for the world.
But specifically for her children, she became aware that she was setting an example of a relationship that was void of affection and genuine attraction.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the example that she wanted to set for her children, which I think is commendable and wonderful that she can make that realization. And it's sad. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, absolutely.
There have been a lot of reactions out there in regards to this post. And like I mentioned before, I would much rather boost the voices of those who have lived the experience of the past 5 years that have directly resulted from the Weeds original 2012 post.
Uh-huh.
And one of the most important conversations that I did listen to was our friends at No Man Knows My Herstory, which is the most kick-ass, no-holds-barred take on Mormon history. They are two queer ladies named Kelsey and Carrie, and I love them. They're the greatest.
Yeah.
And they did a fuck word free episode.
Wow.
Just for this issue. So that it was something that you can share with your true believing family members.
That's
because it is such a big issue. And so they really kind of...
Wow. So they censored themselves so they could have more audience.
So they could reach more people because the message is so important. And so I wanted to reference that podcast and really say that the messenger does matter. And they are definitely more qualified to talk about these issues than I feel like I am. So I'm going to put a link to their podcast in the show notes. Please promise me that this is your homework today. Please take some time to listen to those within the community in regards to this issue, just to kind of expand your understanding if you are not a member of the LGBTQ community.
On our Facebook page, one of our members of the group, Katie, has shared the blog post, and there were a number of comments on that post, one of which was a friend of mine. Her name is Claire Jarvis. Love you. She is a beautiful trans woman who I have known for a long time. And her comment was that this post and this family really fucked with her head as a teen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably a big common consensus with the LGBTQ community. And we were able to have a call with Katie, and these were her remarks about the blog post.
So I started following all these people's blogs, and there was tons of them. And one of them was Josh Weed, and he was anonymous at the time. But one by one, these people all got divorced over the years. And it was just disappointing that it never seemed like it could work out for anybody. And I kind of fell away from following all these blogs because most of them had ended since most of the people were divorced. But at some point, Josh Weed came out as public being gay in 2012. And so his post, he called it the Club Unicorn. So it's like a club that's almost a mythical thing that almost nobody else is doing. And talked about how happy he was in his marriage with his wife. He was very clear in that post that while that path brought him joy, and he said it was the right path for him, he did not endorse it as being the only path for people who are gay or religious. And he recommended that if you are LDS and know anybody that's gay and LDS, your job is to love them and nothing more. I'm reading right from his post. That's exactly what he said. Your job is to love and nothing more. But I knew the LDS people would not treat it that way. And I was very upset about that, knowing that it would be used as a battering ram to beat gay people and tell them that this is what they should be able to do. And even as I've come to not believe in the LDS church, I totally looked up to Josh and Lolly, his wife, and thought, you know, those two, they're the two that can make this work. Like, maybe nobody else can, but they can do it. And I know there's other mixed orientation marriages out there still. There's still a couple that I'm aware of, but it seems like those two really had it made. So yesterday, when I saw Josh posted a headline that said, the post in which we announced the end of our marriage, at first, I thought maybe it's a joke, because Josh tried making his blog into a humor blog for a while. My first instant reaction was, well, maybe it's a joke. And then as I started seeing the responses and people saying how heartbroken they were and how much they loved him and his wife, I realized it was real. And I felt sick. I was devastated. As I was reading, I actually saw stars, wow, this wasn't supposed to happen. These two were supposed to be the ones that had it made.
Thank you so much, Katie.
One question I had, and I'm just going to throw this out there because I don't have the answer, but it's something that kind of came to my mind, is I wanted to compare and contrast the statements and the blog posts and the activism, if you will, of the Weeds in regards to their mixed orientation marriage, and kind of compare and contrast it to Tom Christofferson. Are you familiar with Tom Christofferson?
Yes, I am.
Tom is the gay brother of Todd D. Christofferson, who is a member of the 12 Apostles.
And so he has written a book about being a gay Mormon and his life. It's a biography of his life and experiences of being a gay active Mormon.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen this book also weaponized. Yeah. And so I mean, it's different because he's not in a marriage, but right. It's the same in that it's a gay individual making it work in the Mormon church.
As an open gay person.
As an open gay person and kind of flaunting it and putting it out there like, look. And it makes me cringe because to write it in a book and to publish it and to put it out there so strongly,
yeah.
I can't help but feel like you have to know the problems that are going to happen, the weapon that it's going to be used as when you put it out there.
But I think as a true believing Mormon, you can believe that you can be a perfectly happy and righteous gay person in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And people of the LGBTQ community are saying, and professionals, I will add, are mm-hmm. saying, no, that you can't. Mm-hmm. You are not being true to yourself because the teachings of the church are being gay is bad, being mm-hmm. gay is unnatural,
mm-hmm.
being gay is not God's way, because this is what they've been told, this is what they've been taught. And having these thoughts and feelings about yourself is not a healthy and good thing. And so promoting that you can do that, you can be a happy person, is lying to yourself.
It's disingenuous, and I find it very dangerous.
Absolutely.
And to quote one of the amazing things that Josh said in his blog, is he said that the LDS church policy is killing people.
Absolutely.
It's killing them through self-loathing, self-hatred. It denies their true identity. And
leads them to suicide.
Absolutely. And there was one realization that Josh talks about where someone told him, your orientation is beautiful. It's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And his response was, well, I've always just assumed that I'm
a broken straight person.
That he is a straight person that is broken, and that right. once he dies and is resurrected, that he will come back as, you know, his brokenness right. will be fixed.
And I have heard this from leaders when I was mm-hmm. asking what is the problem with mm-hmm. being gay, and you know, these are the discussions and
mm-hmm.
Excuses that I personally have heard as well,
mm-hmm. that once you die and are resurrected, yeah. then this malfunction will be
cured.
Yes. One of the banners that I want to help to erect in this community is that, you know, do not pathologize their identity.
Yeah.
Stop. It's not a sickness, it's not a problem, it is right. beautiful,
right?
It is who they are.
And it is a good thing. It's not something to be compared to
exactly.
murder or pedophilia. Absolutely.
One of the quotes that Kelsey actually mentions in the No Man Knows My Herstory episode on this issue, she mentions a quote that basically goes like this. Single LDS members go to bed every night praying that they will meet someone and fall in love. And gay LDS members go to bed every night praying that they will never fall in love. And to me, that's just so poignant and so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I almost can't even say it without becoming emotional, because that's really what I feel like is at the root of this issue, is that I cannot believe in any God that wishes that upon his children.
Absolutely.
It's heartbreaking.
And I think that right there is why I am no longer a part of the church. Because even if there is a God, even if the Mormon church is the true church, I do not want any part of it. Because that God is someone who teaches that you are bad because you love someone else, that he made you this way to challenge you and make you suffer. That is not okay with me, and mm-hmm. I cannot worship or follow somebody who teaches this.
No.
The direct result of the 2015 policy stating that a gay person cannot be in a relationship with another gay person
before that, I knew and believed that, oh, you can be gay and you can love a gay person and be in the church. And you know what? Even if you can't go to the temple, you can still live a happy life. But after that came out, now you would have to live a life of loneliness and celibacy, denying of something a part of human nature, or become thrust into outer darkness. And I just can't believe, and I cannot follow somebody who would do that to, apparently, their loving children.
Absolutely. 100% amen. So to lighten the mood a little, and we'll end it on a happy note, we wanted to bring you yet another installment in our Faith Destroying Rumors segment, which I had such a blast receiving all these amazing inputs. Thank you so much, guys, for remembering us and remembering that we're always on the hunt for these now.
Yes, we are. They're so good.
It was super fun. So I did make kind of an adjustment. Thanks, Ryan McKnight, for kind of pushing me in that direction. We have opened it up to not only Faith Destroying Rumors, that we have kind of tweaked it to be the ex-Mormon version, but what about the Faith Promoting Rumors? They were golden.
So, well, golden is, you know, one word for it.
So I did want to give a shout out to our brand new Patreon page. Woo. And also let you know that Ryan McKnight actually took a video of himself talking about three of his most favorite Faith Promoting Rumors from his time on the mission in Guatemala. And they are hilarious. So that's going to be up on Patreon. So any of our supporters, if you wander on over to our Patreon page and support us in making this amazing and entertaining podcast for you, then you can check out his favorite three Faith Promoting Rumors. So I'm going to do a twofer. You get a Faith Promoting Rumor, and then you get a Faith Destroying Rumor.
Woo! Yay! All right.
So the Faith Promoting Rumor that was my favorite from this week, the sister missionaries that come over, once again, back to the sister missionaries, one of them was fresh to the mission. She was really kind of, she was a greenie to the area. She's from Georgia. Mm-hmm. We live in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And she was describing the area in which their apartment used to be and how it is a very wicked area. To support this fact, she shared something that one of the members of the ward had told her, that this area where she was living was so wicked that God actually was withholding the rain from this area. And wow. And she told me, "It's true. I've been in the area for 2.5 months and it hasn't rained one day."
And which area was this?
And it was, we live in Arizona, folks. It can go like 6 months without raining and it's not the end of the world.
That's very normal for it to go like 6 months with no rain, not one drop.
So it was the best thing I've ever heard. And I told this to my never Mormon husband. And he's like, she had to know that they were joking. Like, they were joking, right? And I'm like, I don't know. But to her, it's fact.
Yeah.
Because she's from Georgia. It's fact. And it rains in Georgia and it's not raining in Arizona.
Oh, that's so funny.
So that was my favorite Faith Promoting Rumor, that she lived in such a wicked area that God would withhold the rain.
Yeah. So you better go to church and read your scriptures.
Don't be wicked.
So we can do the rain dance and make the rain come.
So this week on Reddit, thanks so much for the Reddit user Taper Dan Man. He
sorry. I love it.
He paged me in the most epic Faith Destroying Rumor post this week on Reddit. It was posted by the user T-RD. And it goes something like this. "My sister told me that her ex from New Jersey, who served in Panama, had one of his friends tell him that apparently Elder Holland had a sister missionary at Chokehold. No info as to whether it was on his mission or what. Has anyone heard anything like that? That's fucking sketch."
That's a lot of people there. game of telephone.
So this is the definition of a faith-destroying rumor, in case you had any question what we meant.
Yeah.
And my favorite comment, the very first comment, says, "I have a friend in New Mexico and his cousin works with a guy who is friends with the niece of the lady who used to be Holland's personal secretary. Anyways, according to this source, Holland frequently picks up sister missionaries and body slams them to the ground. Seriously, he like picks them up and just body slams them to the ground. And then he hovers over them and is all like, 'Yeah, bitch, how you like me now?'" Totally sketch, yo.
Totally sketch. So sketch.
So, and that comment was by Neil N. Anderson. So, oh my gosh, this is epic Faith Destroying Rumor gold, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Keep them coming. I wanted to give you an update on the efforts of Sam Young and his petition to protect LDS children from worthiness interviews and explicit sexual questions. So the big update this week is that Sam Young finally got to meet with his state president, which he's actually been asking for this meeting for months.
Really?
He has an agenda. He's been asking to meet, and he has been ignored left and right.
Okay.
So finally, after he's had a press conference and an article in the local Houston Chronicle.
Uh-huh.
He was finally granted or summoned to meet with his state president. And initially the state president asked for his wife to be present. And Sam said, why? What's the meeting about? He wouldn't tell him what the meeting is about. And he said, fine, then my wife's not coming. Right. So thank goodness Sam left his wife at home. I'm so glad for that. Good job, Sam. So the result of the meeting with his state president was, number one, no changes in the church are necessary. They came right out and were very firm that everything that he's doing to push for change is completely useless and unnecessary.
Uh-huh.
Number two, numerous times during the interview, he called me an apostate. He read the handbook definition of apostasy to me multiple times. So from Sam's point of view, this was a very clear message that you are an apostate and you are headed towards excommunication.
Right.
Like, he didn't use the word excommunication, but to multiple times call him an apostate.
Read the definition.
Exactly. That's a pretty clear message.
That's a very clear message.
Number three, he told me that I am not to continue speaking out in public. Well, shucky darn, Sam's not going to stop.
Yeah.
And number four, his responsibility is to protect the good name of the church, which I was tarnishing by speaking out.
Another instance of protecting mm-hmm. the image.
Which, if you know anything about the history of excommunication with people that speak out
uh-huh.
about change within the church, this was another threat of excommunication.
Right.
Very clear.
So do you know, I'm going to assume that Sam does not see himself as an apostate.
Absolutely not.
That's true.
Yes.
Right.
And basically Sam's reaction is, I'm not tarnishing the good name of the church. The church is doing that itself.
Yeah.
All I'm doing is I'm here for the children.
Right. If what he's doing is tarnishing the name of the church, that's on the church.
Exactly.
That's not on him.
Exactly. That's the message that I think needs to be widely spread. I asked Sam what we could pass on to our listeners to help him out. Sign the petition. I put it in the link in pretty much every show.
Yeah.
He has a new website where the stories can be shared. If you have a story that involves worthiness interviews when you were a child, you know, I've actually reflected a lot on my own history and...
Me too.
And I do have a story to share, so I will be adding mine as well. Boost the message. Spread it. Use social media to talk to your friends about it. Make plans to come to the march on March 30th in Salt Lake, if at all possible. And just keep fighting. Keep fighting.
Yeah.
And boost the message.
All right, Colleen, do you have any final thoughts?
Beer is healthy, and I'm just going to stick with that.
Great. My final thoughts are probably going to be about Dan Reynolds. I can't wait to see his documentary and go listen to every interview I can find on him. I'm super curious and interested. I love hearing and finding out about famous ex-Mormons. You know, my favorites are probably Brendan Urie from Panic at the Disco, which is my favorite band.
What?
Yeah, he grew up Mormon. Mm-hmm. He talked about it in a concert I went to, which was pretty cool. And Tyler Glenn, of course, from Neon Trees.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I mean, I suppose Dan Reynolds isn't technically an ex-Mormon, but he's a Mormon who's talking about non-traditional Mormon things, and I find that interesting. Mm-hmm. So those are my final thoughts.
And one more time, I wanted to announce to all of you that we have launched our Patreon page. So all of you who love what we do or who are mildly amused by what we do.
Yeah. I'll take mildly amused.
We finally have opened up a source where you can become a part of our show and you can help us to financially grow and bring you better quality entertainment. We have some goals on our Patreon page that I just wanted to share with you what we need funds to do to bring you a better show.
Right.
So there's some software, there's some subscriptions, there's some hardware, and we have different tiers of contributions that you can give us with different rewards that will definitely include blooper reels, and we will soon be bringing you the Angels on Fire doing Drunk Kitchen.
Yeah.
Yay! So we're talking about doing a promotion on what we need to get to uh-huh. do the live Drunk Mormon Kitchen.
So subscribe to our Patreon account. If we get tons of subscribers, then we'll do our show. Yes. You'll see us fully inebriated.
It's like drunk history, but it's drunk Mormonism.
Oh, that's going to be great.
So we can't wait. So jump on, become a part of this, because we are so excited to do more for you, and we just need a little bit of help to get there. So thanks so much for all the support. We can't wait to do this with you.
All right, that's all we have for today. Be sure to check out the Mormon Happy Hour podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Patreon.
Cheers! Cheers.